Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some useful nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem, just like this nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm so glad that you could join me today. Now, talking about being true to our nature, have you ever stopped to consider how closely connected our health and well-being is to how we show up in our careers? Transformational career coach Brooke Taylor has. Like many of us, she found herself in a pattern of achievement that was far from healthy. She was forced to take a long, hard look at what she now calls her success wounds, and she's changed the way she lives and works as a result. She now says that she's an example that you can achieve what you desire sustainably, that you can still be high-performing without sacrificing your self-esteem, your spirit, your ambition, or your health. Brooke was named Top Career Coach to Watch by the Australian Business Journal in 2021, and her transformational group coaching programs and workshops have changed the lives of thousands of women around the world. And the first thing you read on her website, brooketaylorcoaching.com, is that the new paradigm for success is here. And I asked her, what does she mean by that?
So for so long, we, and specifically our Western culture, have been stuck in what I would call an old paradigm of success. An old paradigm of success is based on patriarchal values. It's based on greed, corruption, basically power over others, rather than power between and shared amongst us. We live in an old paradigm of success right now. You can see that in capitalism. You can see that in our corporations in terms of kind of zero-sum games. You can see it in violence, war, all of that.
Yeah.
What I mean by a new paradigm of success is ushered in through a more feminine power. A new paradigm success means power between us, shared amongst us. And what I found through my work, specifically helping women to heal their relationship with success and achievement and see their self-worth as intrinsically driven, what then happens is they then usher in this new paradigm of success, where success is about the process. Success is about being in alignment with one's values. Success is self-defined. It's a process. And from there, that's where true fulfillment and happiness can be born.
Yes, we are stuck in a box and we're not fitting the box very well is what I feel sometimes these days. We've been taught that this is how it is. It's a very patriarchal, male dominated. Men don't get upset when I say this, you know, but it is that kind of energy that we're working in, if we're working women and men, and it just doesn't seem to be working for us any longer. If it ever did it ever work for us?
I don't think it ever did. I think a lot of people will say, and history will show us, that the kind of arc of justice and the arc of empowerment is improving. It's up and to the right. And yet, you know, I think we can know through our history books and anthropological records that there's been this kind of sidelining of the feminine over the years, and this sidelining of sharing, such that we can all, you know, when we all stay in our same box, when we all go through the same educational system, when we all ascribe to the same value set, that conformity is where power is found for a few rather than for many. So I think there's this fear of letting go of that power. And what would happen to our political systems? What would happen to our corporations? What would happen to our kind of traditional systems of power? I mean, ultimately they might change, but I think it would be for the better, because I've seen that on an individual level, and I'm happy to share more about that. But individual healing is collective healing, and you know, that's what I think is so exciting about this work.
Yes, no, I do would I would very much like you to share more on that. But I was just thinking as I was listening to you, I was doing a lot of work with a nonverbal communication specialist, a nonverbal intelligence specialist, Michael Grinder, many years ago. And he always used to say, we need to get over this concept of being in love with the influence of power and become more attuned to the power of influence. And that seems to, you know, sit a lot better with the kind of thing that you're talking about here.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I talk a lot about this notion of influence with my clients. And when I ask about, I ask them, what does power mean to them? It always says, they always say in some way, shape, or form, it's the ability to influence an outcome. It's the distance between declaring something to be true and that thing actually happening. And the thing is that once we're tuned into our own internal guidance system and once we're leading from the true self, that power becomes even more powerful because our ability to influence is rooted in a truer source and it's rooted in a more pure purity of heart rather than any sort of transmutation of corruption or greed or all of that. So I agree.
Yes, I've always liked that that saying. It really turns things on their head. Now, before we go forward, I want to hear a lot more about the work that you're doing. How did you get into this? What got you into this place in the first place?
So I was born and raised in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley, very much in the midst of the tech boom. My parents moved to Palo Alto in an effort to be part of the tech boom. And it was this cultural upbringing that led me to believe that intellect was key and king, that if you could dream it, you could do it. Very American, grab the bull by the horns, make it happen, rugged individualism.
Yeah.
And within this kind of cultural upbringing, I also went to a very intense and elite all-girls school where that shaped very much who I am today in some of the best ways possible. And it also instilled within me that my worthiness of love and belonging to that community was very much contingent upon what I achieved, what I produced, what I did, rather than the inherent beauty and worthiness of who I am as an individual. This wasn't, a lot of people tend to blame their parents. This wasn't necessarily just my parents. This is very much like the paradigm that I grew up in, especially in tech in the Bay Area. You couldn't really separate the two, like tech from where I grew up. So I took this kind of, I learned at this very young age that if I wasn't achieving and if I wasn't producing, then I was unsafe. So I took this gold star chasing mentality through to a top university. I got my first job at Google. I started climbing the ranks very quickly. I was in a sales role, very clear and very obvious to know where I stood. And I loved that. And I was either the best or I was the worst. And because my worthiness was fixed to my promotion, my quota, my last piece of feedback from my manager, what my friends thought of me, I was on a roller coaster all the time. And to numb that roller coaster, to numb this subconscious, deep-seated unworthiness, I also turned to do alcohol and drugs in order to numb that pain. So I was very much this work hard, play hard type that you will see in London or New York or whatever, or probably everywhere, you know, kill it, work very hard Monday through Thursday, Friday through Saturday, drink, wake up hungover, sometimes in demoralization, have a lot of anxiety and just jump right back into work on Monday like nothing happened. And I was stuck in this cycle for many, many years, most of my, you know, young adult life. Thankfully, I did hit kind of a breaking point where I realized that I wasn't just addicted to alcohol, but I was addicted to external validation and success and what you thought of me.
Yeah.
And so I had to get to work to not only get sober, which I did, but also to recover from this spiritual malady, this deep-seated belief that my worthiness was contingent upon what I produced and what I achieved and how well I did. And that pain is what I call the success wound. And it's this deep-seated, unconscious, but kind of universal trauma that's instilled in childhood when we get these messages, spoken, unspoken, tacit and explicit, about our worthiness of love and belonging. So what I had to get to work on was that success wound and starting to create a new paradigm of success for myself first. And I realized that the more recovery I did, the more therapy I did, the more healers I saw, the more in touch and in tune I got with my true self, the truth of who I was born as, the more these other kind of behaviors started to fall away. And the more I created something that I call conscious success. And conscious success is the state of harmony and peace and integrity that comes from following the directions of my internal guidance system rather than the directions of the culture or society. And that, ironically, is has led me to greater success and achievement and performance and so much deeper fulfillment because it's on my terms. And I found kind of my magic lane in all of this, and really sky's the limit since then.
Yes, I love that concept of conscious success. And I know that a lot of people do still think that you're not successful if you haven't got the big job and the big loads of money in the bank and the big car and the big house and the, and so it goes on. And people are stressing themselves out thinking that if they lose all of that, or if they, you know, they're just going to be nobody. But actually the opposite's true, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think we all know that intellectually. Money can't buy you happiness. You know, you can't find belonging in the new thing. But it takes a lot to know that on an embodied cellular level, doesn't it?
It does.
Because we get so many messages to the contrary. It takes sometimes these rock bottom moments to really get that, because it's a brave thing to step out of the traditional notions of what success looks like and to self-define that. And, you know, you'll even find in pockets that you maybe exit. For example, I exited corporate and joined, you know, I'm now an entrepreneur. There's a success wound there too.
Yes.
You know, there's a paradigm or a structure of what a successful entrepreneur who's paving their own way, I say that in air quotes, looks like too. So you have to be careful because there are these structures everywhere, and it takes a lot of discipline and courage to continually to check back in with your heart and say, is this for me still, or is it another way? So I'm always working on that myself.
Yeah. And you used a word there. Still, is this for me still? Because things change all the time.
All the time.
We change all the time. You know, we grow, don't we?
Yeah. We sure do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we go through moments of, we become parents, or somebody dies, or there's a catalytic event, and our sense of meaning and our worldview shifts. And as a result, that's going to have a ripple effect on how we perceive relationships, the meaning of life, where our career fits in. And so it is important to be constantly in this work, but more importantly, in tune with your own internal guidance system, because it's not going to point due north all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's then get on to some of the things that you've encountered when you're doing this work with other people, but also what would you say, or how do you even start this process with somebody? Presumably people come to you when they are at their wit's end, or they just, you know, they're just lost, don't know what they're doing, you know, don't know what to do next.
Very much so. And people come to me at their own rock bottom moment. They are not just burnt out, but disillusioned. They might be in some sort of existential crisis. If it's not, you know, I've worked for the past 15 years, for example, building this life and building this career, and gosh, it just does not feel like home. What's wrong with me? What have I done? Other people who are saying that the loops of anxiety, you know, thinking about workplace relationships, the last piece of feedback that they got, their teams, that just keeps them up at night, and they go on vacation with those thoughts. They can't seem to get a break from it. People are kind of driven down to a point where they're actually willing to do this work, because I consider myself a career coach, air quotes, but this way of transforming your career is not traditional career coaching. What I mean by that is it's a very inside out point of view and transformation on career development and progression. You have to really be at like a jumping off point of knowing like, the old way of being, the old way of working isn't working for me, but I have no idea what else to do. And so that's where humility, willingness, and readiness comes in. Very much the same way as addiction. You hit kind of a bottom. You're like, I can't do this anymore. There has to be a better way, that kind of prayer. And so that's where people become willing to say, okay, I'm going to set aside everything I think I know about success, achievement, work, what I think fulfillment looks like, and actually look inside, do excavate, find my internal guidance system, my true self, who I was and who I am before the world told me who I was, and start to create an aligned vision for success and career from that place. Because as long as the perfectionism or the people pleaser or the controller is running the show, you'll never find fulfillment.
Yeah, that's so true. And so here's the big question, right? How do you do that? Where do you start?
Yes. So over the course of my probably 7 years of doing this work, I've worked with over 5,000 high achieving, mostly corporate women. I typically work with women who are kind of like unicorns in the corporate or professional world. And what I mean by that is they're conscious. They have a self-awareness. They have an appetite for personal development. They're somewhat spiritual, conscious, and aware. But they can't seem to let go of their old ways of working. So I have a 4-step methodology that I've developed after working with all of them to heal this success wound, to transform their relationship with work, and to instill conscious success. And like with any wound, the first step is to diagnose it. If you had a gaping wound in your arm, you'd take it to the doctor and they would assess the size, the shape, the origin, what happened, the depth. So that's where we start. I'll have people diagnose their success origin story. Where did they learn and how did they learn? What beliefs did they, take on about success? For me, I learned that if I wasn't succeeding, I wasn't safe. And that if I wasn't the best, then I wasn't the worst. And this came about through my upbringing, through my educational system, and through kind of various moments of embarrassment or failure that I experienced early on. So I get people really clear on the size and shape of their success wound and where it came from. The second step is to vision. So we need to create an internally aligned vision for success and career. And once we start to diagnose, people start to see almost like their patterns and their success wound as separate from them. And they start to tune into the truth of who they are. And so when we create that vision for success and for what's next, people like, you can call it a North Star, a purpose statement. It can be as specific as, a 5-year plan, but that has to come from the true self. That can't come from lack, fear, perfectionism, control, people pleasing, etc.
Yeah. Or what somebody tells you you should be doing, right?
Absolutely.
Or
absolutely.
You should be doing what I've been doing here and, yes. Just copy me and you'll be successful. That sort of thing. Yeah.
Yes. Or this is what a leader looks like at our company.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Or this is what an entrepreneur in Los Angeles who's in the spiritual space needs to do in order to, X, Y, Z. So it can be tough because you literally are stepping out of your group, your in-group. And in some ways that can be dangerous in a way. And by dangerous, I mean, you could be risking a lot by stepping out, and it can feel that way. So step 3 is to heal. We need to heal the causes and conditions that brought you to this breakdown, breakthrough. We have to heal the belief systems. We have to heal the kind of small t traumas that occurred and that we identified in step 1 in order to move forward. And with my clients, I do a lot of subconscious reprogramming. And the reason why I do that is because our subconscious mind controls 95% of our behavior. Only 5 to 10% of our behavior is conscious. So you might be saying, God, I got to do this differently. Or, God, I got to put my laptop down at 6. Or, gosh, I need to be running my one-on-ones differently, or, what have you. But unless your subconscious mind is on board with your conscious mind, it won't happen. So the subconscious mind can't tell the difference between what's imagined and what's actually happening.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I take it, which is brilliant and spectacular how cool our minds are. So I take my clients through a subconscious reprogramming process to literally make them feel safe in this new paradigm of success that they've created for themselves, such that they can then take step four, which is to emerge and to take action on the vision that they set in step one. So that can look like a job search, that can look like a new way of leading, that could look like starting a business, any one of those things. So that makes, so basically step one through three ensures that you can actually take those steps from a place in integrity and power.
Yeah, that's a great process. But hold that thought for a moment, because we have to take a very short break right now. I'll be back with more from Brooke right after this from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears. Beef and Skittles. Cider with Rosie. Common or garden. Ant and Deck, Fish and Chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest, career coach Brooke Taylor. Now, I loved what she was saying before the break about feeling safe. That lack of safety, the fear of moving away from the norm, it's a huge factor in keeping us stuck. Here's Brooke again.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt that so deeply. I think that's what kept me in addiction for so long, even just, you know, addicted to, again, external validation, but even alcohol, because I didn't know who I was without this identity of a work hard, play hard person. I had crafted this identity very strategically because it got me good feedback. It got me the friends that I felt comfortable with. It gave me a place. And so, gosh, that's a scary proposition to say, let go of that. Let go of the title of being the, you know, get shit done person, or let go of, you know, the identity of being the top performer in this way that you're comfortable with. It's, it might not seem scary at first, but it's what keeps us stuck.
It is what keeps us stuck. Yeah. And so for a lot of people, they'll be listening to this and they'll be thinking, yeah, but what if I don't succeed? What if I've done all this work, right? Now I've jumped off that roundabout, that merry-go-round. And then I can see some people sitting at home or wherever they're listening to this thinking, yeah, but then if it doesn't work, what then? I mean, you know, that I'm sure that you've heard that many people.
Always, always. It's a leap of faith, right? Because we're leaving an old way of working and operating and an old belief system and jumping to a new way. Here's what I've seen happen with my clients, and it's not always things I can expect. It's kind of like a polish over here, shine over there.
Yeah.
Way of thinking. I've seen people not just double their salaries, not just recover from debilitating burnout, not just get promotions faster, but also call in the loves of their life, heal from chronic anxiety that plagued them forever, sleep better, drop weight because they're no longer, you know, scared of, no longer needing to numb or cope with food or alcohol. I've seen people continue to rise in their careers, but in a way that feels so much more fulfilling. And I think we can all relate to you know, when we are not just happy, but fulfilled, when we feel like we belong and we have a sense of place and we feel comfortable with who we are, comfortable in our own skin, that has the most far-reaching ripple effect of anything that I could possibly imagine. And so, you know, yes, it's a scary proposition to say, okay, I'm not going to be, you know, pinning my worth on what my manager says anymore, and I'm going to be charting my own way. But people are really attracted to that, even on a subconscious level. In my own life, what happened was that I bottomed out while still at Google, and I knew I wouldn't be at the company forever. And yet I did stay from that point of this isn't working to my point of actually leaving the company. It was 3 years' time. And what happened in those 3 years' time, as I healed my success wound and as I started to redefine success, I ended up changing jobs to something that was so much more aligned. I ended up facilitating workshops for C-suite at a lot of our advertising clients. I ended up getting my coaching certificate, and people were really attracted to this kind of like new, healthy, sober, you know, light that I had brought to the office.
Yeah.
And I got promoted faster. I don't know if anyone can relate to this, but going into a performance review, being pretty certain that you weren't going to get promoted, and then you get promoted, and you know, they tell you the reasons why, and you're like, oh my gosh, that's not what I thought was going to happen, because I wasn't working as quote hard. I was working smarter, and people were attracted to that. I even got an opportunity to manage a team after that, because they saw how I'd transformed my life and they were attracted to that. So yeah, it really does have a ripple effect.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Yeah. So it's getting over that hurdle, and that's the one thing that you can help people do. Now, you know, we're talking here about executives in business. We're talking about high-flying women particularly. But I'm sure that there are things which also are relatable to somebody who is, you know, looking after children, they're homemakers, they're, you know, this isn't just something for the big high flyers, is it? It does relate to everybody.
Absolutely. 100%. It's a universal experience. If you have ever had the thought or the experience or the belief that, you know, if I'm not doing it according to what society tells me to do, then I don't belong. That's a sign that you have a success wound. If you've ever thought to yourself, what I'm doing in the home, taking care of children, or what I'm doing at, you know, in my volunteer work isn't good enough, and I'm not worthy because of it, that's a sign you have a success wound. This is very much a universal experience. And I see this a lot, especially with people my age and a lot of women who I work with, when they leave business and start to take care of their child or they're on maternity leave, they start to question everything. They're like, if I spend the whole day on the couch with my baby or on the floor playing, like, what's happened? You know, where am I? Where's my identity? And that's, again, it's a sure sign, a very common sign that our identity is very much fixed on what we do for work. And so this work is so important for everyone, because the truth is, and this might sound like a very radical concept, and I share this with my clients a lot, and they're like, I can't believe that. But if you were to sit on the couch and eat bonbons for the rest of your life, you would be just as worthy and good and valuable as somebody who is the CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
Oh, but you see, I'm totally with you on that. Right. Yeah.
Good. Good. That's, you know, and I wonder if we were to survey the audience, maybe your audience would believe that. But a lot of my clients, they're like, I could get on board with that 60% intellectually, but that would be a very difficult thing for them to embody and believe for themselves.
Yeah, I can see that that would be hard for people to understand. And, you know, we're not advocating sitting on a couch for the rest of your life. Eating bonbons. Also, it might be attractive to some
maybe
people.
Maybe an afternoon.
Yeah. An afternoon now and then, not a bad thing. But yeah, but that's so ingrained in into our consciousness as well. It's that thing whereby if you're just sitting around not doing very much, then you're not worthy. You're not a, you don't deserve whatever it is that you are supposed to deserve. So this is another change in the mindset and the socialization that we've all gone through that we have to accept to move forward, don't we? In this new paradigm of success. Yeah. So then if we bring it back to the, you know, sort of middling sort of successful person. And even then, as I say that, I think, you know, you're making judgments here. And what is that judgment? You know, what's that got to do with anything, right? Because success is not about where you are in the hierarchy of a business. It's that's not what we're talking about here. But say people who are middle management, a lot of people are they get very, very bored and they can't seem to get themselves out of that rut. Do you see people like that as well, or do you mostly see people who are pretty high flying?
No, absolutely. I see people who, it's not so much like a demographic, like at a certain title or socioeconomic status or at a certain age necessarily. It's people who are feeling like asking the question, is this it? So people who are in a career funk, plateaued, bored, what have you, yes. And it goes back to the same solution, because the truth is that we feel that sense of kind of boredom or restlessness when we're not tuned into the joy and the passion and the interest and the zest that life offers us every moment of every day. And a lot of people also have a misconception that work, you know, has to be boring, is boring, that, you know, life can be mundane. I disagree with that completely. I think, you know, even just this notion of like working like a dog, a lot of people, you know, think that that expression means like overworking. When have you seen a dog work themselves to the bone? They work with such joy. No, they love it.
Yeah.
They're excited. They work until they're tuckered out and they can't wait to do it again tomorrow. I think that that's available for everyone. I genuinely do. And that might take a big transformation of our society. And yet I really do believe that there's that zest for life and passion that's available, and that sort of passion and engagement and excitement, it doesn't have to just come from work. There are so many different sources for that.
Yeah, but work can be fun. I always remember somebody saying to me, actually not that long ago, because I said I was, I was busy, with work things, and they said, "Oh, boring stuff." I said, "There's abs," and I was so defensive. It was
gosh,
funny. I said, "There is absolutely nothing boring about what I do."
No, I couldn't agree more.
But you know, there's that conception, isn't there? That if you're working, it's got to be boring. Work's boring. You work to earn money so that you can have fun. You know, what kind? Yeah.
I agree. I get it. It's like a means to an end.
But, you know, it really doesn't have to be. You can, and, you know, let's not say that everybody's going to just sort of hand in their, you know, leave work tomorrow and find something a lot better that'll suit them. It doesn't work that way either. But there are, you know, ways that you can move through that. You can actually create a better life for yourself. You can have that success, which is genuinely, genuinely worth something to you as a conscious being.
Absolutely. And we've talked a lot about the what do people do with their career, but there are two other really critical components to fulfilling and purposeful work. And that's the how we work, how we approach our work, what version of ourselves do we bring to the work? And then there's the why am I here? What does this mean to me? And so actually 70% of my clients who come to me, they don't switch jobs.
Right.
They just change their relationship to the work, how they work, why they work. And they infuse a greater sense of meaning. And when there's this kind of magic that occurs, when the true self steps forward and our wounds start to heal, we change. And then the world around us changes. And of course, I'm sure you talk about this all the time, but we see the world as we see it. And so that can have an immense impact on our sense of fulfillment and joy in work too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So changing our well, not changing our attitudes, but changing our perceptions, actually doing it's again coming back to doing the work from the inside out, right?
That's right.
So, you know, how do we feel about work? Can we change our perceptions of what we're actually doing? Because maybe a lot of people who are in that space are again operating from what somebody else is telling them they should be doing. And maybe what they are doing is, you know, something really worthwhile. It's something that they could really be enjoying. But because they have this overlay of somebody else's perception of how something should be or how something should be done, then they're not getting the true enjoyment out of it that they might do.
Absolutely. There's a very unconscious script that I think we're all reading off of in some way, shape, or form. I think it's very obvious in the kind of career space. You know, a lot of folks go to university or go, you know, get an apprenticeship or what have you. And then you take the next step, you get the first job, and then you keep going. And then success is staying at that job for 10 years. And then before you know, and then you know, save for retirement, and then you save for children and all of that. I experienced this even, in wedding planning, because I got married in November. I hired a wedding planner, and she's like, okay, here's the script for your wedding. You know, she's like, you know, at 4 PM, you know, we start with the ceremony, and then at 4:30, you know, you break and you go to cocktail hour. And then at 7 PM you do this. And I had to say, like, hang on, you know, this is a very cookie cutter approach, even to wedding planning. And I found myself getting consumed with the, like, well, what dress would I wear? And, you know, what white dress would I wear? And what, you know, Pinterest board would I be interested in, what flowers and what colors? And so I got sucked into this, like, matrix of wedding planning, like,
wow,
very, very quickly. And I had to stop and pause and pull the wedding apart and consciously and intentionally be like, how do I want to feel on this day? How do I want my guests to feel? What, you know, moments do I want to infuse with presence and remembering? And what does this wedding mean to me and my husband? And what does this marriage mean? And we changed things up a lot, and we came out with, like, a beautiful ceremony. There was a meditation during the ceremony. People were participants rather than witnesses. There was, like, a group blessing. And our intention was that our guests would leave feeling inspired by our love.
Beautiful. Yeah.
And that's not the script of a wedding. And that's not the, you know, and so I'm just sharing that as, like, there are so many unconscious scripts that we just kind of, like, fall into, including with work and lives and all of that. So it's important to pause and just examine the script that's running.
Oh, that is so true. And I love the example of a wedding there. How many couples have found their wedding to be a total trial rather than a celebration because they weren't true to their values and listened to everybody else who said what they should be doing? Not the best recipe for a successful day. Well, it's time for us to take another short break right now. Back with more after this from our station sponsors.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory. E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Good, And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist. Now, we had some great pointers from my guest, Brooke Taylor, before the break, and she used a very important word, feel. We often stop ourselves from feeling because we don't feel great and we don't want to go there. But when we allow ourselves to feel into things, no matter how hard, that's where magic can start to happen in our lives and we can start to heal. I think it's really important that we stop hiding from our feelings, that we allow ourselves to lean into them and experience them fully and then move on. Here's what Brooke has to say.
Absolutely. I think I'll address this on a few different ways. I think our feeling state, our feelings are always pointing us to something deeper. I think they can point to other sort of traumas that we haven't felt before, but I think that's on a psychological level. And I think it can point us to things that need our healing or need our attention. I think our feelings are also divinely given. And I think that they're attached to our intuition. And I believe that an internal guidance system, an intuition, a true self, whatever you want to call it, there is something greater than us that's kind of infused within each of us, whether you call it like a shared humanity or collective consciousness, I call that divine. And I think that there's a wisdom that's greater than my conscious mind that actually lives in my body. And so if I tune into how I feel, how my body feels, not how my mind thinks I'm feeling or my mind thinks about something, I often tune into my truth and a greater wisdom that's available to me. And it doesn't often make sense. Like people say, falling in love doesn't make sense, or passion sometimes doesn't make sense. And that's because it's beyond the brain. It's beyond the senses. It's something deeper. So yeah, I always, with my clients do a lot of work, not just on values, because I think that's very much of the brain, but core desired feelings. What are your most desired states of being and feeling, and where do you feel those? And once people start to realize, actually my most desired state of being is feeling connected, feeling a sense of ease, maybe feeling excited and energized, that takes us out of the logical mind. And I have an example of a client of mine who, by identifying her core desired feelings and starting to pay attention to how she feels, she ended up moving from New York City, where she thought she was going to raise her newborn child, and moving upstate to like a remote village in upstate New York, because she was like, actually, this is where I feel not just most at peace and at ease, but most like myself. And yeah, that was not part of the plan. And if she had not tuned into that feeling space, she wouldn't have changed this part of her life and had this level of contentment. So I think it's really important.
Yes, it is. And yes, you hit the nail on the head there as well. It's that level of contentment. It's that level of feeling at peace with yourself and being in a place where, you know, also, I don't know, maybe she feels safer there, but also, you know, being in nature, being closer to nature. I mean, New York's a great city, but there ain't a great deal of green space apart from, you know,
no.
Central Park and a few other parks around. Yeah, not that great in terms of green space. So yeah, getting out into the countryside, I think for a lot of people is a key thing. Mm-hmm. Really does
absolutely
help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she's happily bringing up her baby there, which is a lovely thought. Yeah.
Yes.
And so when we are in this place of, you know, not knowing really who we are, what we're doing, and being completely lost, they can call on you, obviously. But the first thing to do, maybe, if you identify that that's where you are, what would be the first thing that you would suggest that somebody does? You know, if you're feeling really distraught, you realize that you're numbing yourself with alcohol, food, whatever. When you get to that realization, what do you think would be the most effective thing to do as a first step?
When you're feeling lost, off track, not sure where you are, or how you got here, it's because you've been following somebody else's definition of success. You've been following somebody else's plan, somebody else's script for your life. So the very first thing that you can do is just ask yourself, where did my ideas about what a successful life, quote unquote, come from? Whose are they? Are they my parents? Are they societies? Are they my friends? Are they my managers? Whose are they? Because chances are they're not yours.
Yeah.
The next question then to ask yourself is, if I were to look at and ask my deepest, most intelligent, wise part of myself what it wants, what would it say? And I asked myself both of these questions in my early recovery, and the results that it yielded was profound. Because that first question helps me to identify, you know, and kind of separate my internal wisdom from the kind of script that I've been following. And it helps me to hear almost like the voices and the shoulds as not my own. And then the second question helped me to get in touch with the wise part of myself, my internal guidance system. And again, just kind of showing up and asking those questions over and over again, that's what led me to make a dramatic choice as a young 24-year-old in New York City who is single to give up alcohol. Like, that's pretty radical for a person that age, right? No, yeah. It was not cool. It was not cool. There was no sober curious movement. There was no mocktails on, you know, bar menus. It wasn't chic. It was weird. So just those two questions helped me to say, you know what, I don't care anymore. This is what I need and this is what I want. And it's led to a truer, more beautiful life than I ever could have possibly imagined. Not to mention, at least in Los Angeles, giving up alcohol is now chic. So I was very much ahead of the trend.
Yes. Well, I know when I gave up alcohol, which I was much older than you were, but it was a bit of a problem because still a lot of places weren't really catering for people who weren't drinking. And then everybody assumed that I was an alcoholic. It wasn't that at all. My body just started to reject alcohol and I couldn't tolerate it any longer.
Yeah.
But now a lot of places are catering for people who don't drink. But more than that, you know what? Now as I get older and I've got to that age where I don't really care anymore, you know, mm-hmm. I'll go into a bar and ask for tea. I'll ask for a cup of tea in a bar. And they are very happy to give me that. And, you know, I'm the one standing at meetings and standing at social events with my cup of tea or mug of tea in my hand, and everybody else is, you know, drinking alcohol or sometimes a soft drink. But I just don't care anymore. You know, mm-hmm. it's what I like to drink. So why mm-hmm. shouldn't I do it? Mm-hmm. But yeah, mm-hmm. it's the same when I gave up drinking. It's like everybody was saying, well, isn't there something you can do about that? Well, why? I'll just give up. You know, I'll just stop. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem. Only for other people and only because you couldn't get very much as an alternative.
Sure. And alcohol might sound like an inconsequential example, but it's actually something that's so ingrained in our lives.
Correct.
It's something that's so protected by society. It's something that's so kind of like personal to people. And so I think it's actually very similar to other kind of quote countercultural decisions that we might make to leave the workforce entirely and to raise a family, for example, or to, step down from being a manager and be an individual contributor, you know, these kind of unpopular, what is she doing? Why are they doing that? Decisions, but they can be the right things for us.
Yes. And so not to be afraid of doing those. And I think that is something which for a lot of people, it takes a certain level of maturity and age to get to that point. Certainly it took me a long time to get to that point. But yeah, I mean, if you can, you know, what I love is that people who are younger and younger and younger are getting to that point where they're realizing that this isn't it at all. Yeah. What we've been sold, that is not that, you know, we should be sending it back, mm-hmm. back and ask mm-hmm. for our money back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. I agree. And I think my sister's, you know, she's a lot younger than me, but she's like a Gen Z, and they are just radical in the way that they are trying to, yeah, define success on their own terms and find their authenticity in themselves and redefine what gender and sexuality looks like. And I think it's really inspiring.
Yeah, it is. And so then if anybody wants to find out more about your work, and maybe if they want to ask you to work with them, where do they find out more about you?
Yeah, you can find me on my website. It's brooketaylorcoaching.com. I'm also on Instagram at Brooke V. Taylor. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well, Brooke Taylor Coaching. And I offer a couple freebies on my website. I have a worksheet that helps you get unstuck and come up with your internally aligned career plan. And I have a couple other free workshops on my website that you can access.
That's fantastic. So those free workshops that you have to sign up for, or are they, you know, are they courses, as it were, that that just sit online?
There are free workshops that you can just sign up for, give your email address, and you can take. You can learn about the 5 success strategies that secretly sabotage your career and how to fix them, as well as other kind of free meditations and elements that will help you create an internally aligned vision for your career.
Yeah, because I think that's very important, the meditation piece and the, you know, the sitting in silence and allowing your inner wisdom to come up with what it is that you need to be doing. Yeah.
Yes, couldn't agree more. Huge tool of mine.
Well, yeah, and mine. Well, Brooke, I think it sounds fantastic what you're doing. And I think it's great that you've turned your life around. Not that it wasn't unsuccessful in many people's terms. You were very successful. But now even more so, and helping other people find their own means of getting to a place where they are truly successful and not necessarily in the accepted meaning of the word. So thank you so much for coming on the show and talking to me about it. It's been fantastic. I've loved speaking with you and sharing experiences with you. I mean, certainly I've been through all of that myself as well. In my time, you know, over my many years. And I remember when I left, I was working in mainstream media, and I remember when I left, a load of people's jaws dropped to the floor and they did not understand why. But it was because it was not aligned with me and I couldn't carry on with it, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So their belief in how successful I was, you know, it had no real basis, it had no real foundation, because I was not enjoying it and I wasn't thriving in that environment. So yeah, you find something else to do. You find you move on. It takes a lot of work. It took me a lot of work anyway.
Couldn't agree with you more. It does. Yeah. But it's incredible. You took the leap of faith and, you know, charted your own path. And I would imagine you feel more successful now than you might have done previously.
I do. I feel more successful. I feel healthier. I'm happier. Yeah. And that's success, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's it.
And I'm sure you feel the same way. So, Brooke, thank you so, so much for coming on the show. I'm going to go on back onto your website again and find out a few more things. I might go through your free sort of questionnaire so that I can just see what that feels like.
Please do. Yeah, I would love to chat with you about it. And thank you so much. It's been great to speak with you.
Oh, you're welcome. And on that note, we're at the end of the show. I hope you'll join me here on Alchemy 101 and UK Health Radio again for more inspirational guests. If you're listening to the podcast version of this show and you like what you hear, I'd love it if you would subscribe and share this episode. It would be amazing if you could leave a review too. But for now, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.